Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Mobility Radio, featuring industry leaders and innovators in mobile technology.
Lee Cantor with Brett Cooper from BlueFletch, the underwriter of this program, another episode of Mobility Live, and this is going to be a good one. Hi, Brett.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you very much for having us on today. So we'll start out with a couple quick recaps from last week.
That's right. You had a busy week last week, huh?
Yes.
You had the GSMA was in town doing their little thing, GSMA, and Mobility Live.
Mobility Live, yeah. So definitely really big. It was over, I think, over 250 people at GSMA, and then about 1,000 at Mobility Live.
It's not a competition.
It's not anymore. I mean definitely somebody. But no, it was definitely the first year, and I think Reed's going to talk about that when we get to him in a second. Love to hear more about that, about the conference and who they brought to town. It's definitely a big deal for Atlanta. And then a couple other big things going on. At Mobility Live, we talked about they announced the Mobile Stars. So there was five folks that won awards for a lot of the effort and work around bringing mobility to Atlanta and helping us grow. So Jonathan Lecomp from Verizon, Glenn Lurie from AT&T is now taking over the mobility group there. Tom Daly from Coke, who we had on here, Elizabeth Minot, and then Aaron Hildegrass from Big Nerd Ranch. So five folks who definitely are well-deserving for a lot of the efforts over the last decade, bringing mobile and mobile initiatives to Atlanta. And then,
So what'd you like about the event?
I spoke, and I think I like my event the best.
That's what I heard. Yours was the best.
My wife told you that, or what?
Steve.
Nice. No, it was.
I read one of his tweets.
there was definitely some very diverse speakers there. So there were sessions where the development and tech arcs got into it, and then there's the dad one where the lawyers got into it. So it was it's good to see a little conflict and creative discussions around how people think about the business and the technology behind mobile and how it's driving technology and industry forward.
Now, was it only Atlanta people, or were people from all over?
There were a lot of people from all over. So
Surprising?
I think not so much. I think the people the most surprising. So there was a couple of folks from North Dakota, I always enjoy their speaking style. So, and they're fun to drink with. So definitely hung out and grabbed some beers with those guys.
So what was that, Mount Rushmore app?
They actually did the app for the Mobility Live event. So. This company called Myriad out of Fargo, but it was a good event. And I think there was a couple other events last week in regards to GSMA, Mobility Live, and then in town there was Streets Alive as a event of a lot of people getting together. So fall is a very busy time, and I think this month coming up there's a couple other events. Some of them are mobile related. So Southwired is next week. Southwired.org, I think, is 6th through the 10th. They have a lot of interesting speakers. Some mobile, a lot of
right. That's digital in general, right?
And then ConnectJS, which has some mobile components, is up in Cumberland around the 17th, 18th. And then a non-mobile, but I think there is one guy speaking who did some mobile work. TEDx Petrie is also on October 17th. So folks get a chance to go out to those. Definitely get online, register for them, and check it out for the day. Went to a couple of those last year, and they're really, really good.
Cool. So why don't we get started? We got Reed Patterson here. He's the head of North America and Global Head of Strategic Engagement with GSMA. Welcome, Reed.
Thank you. Reed Peterson.
Peterson, even better.
It is even better. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So, Reed, I heard your royalty, and why don't you talk about your big GSMA event?
Yeah, no idea where the royalty thing came from.
What is that? It's just a rumor.
Yeah, we had a fantastic event. I mean, I think this was our first Mobile 360 that we've done worldwide. We've got others to follow in Cape Town, South Africa. We've got one coming in Brussels. And then the next one is going to be in Dubai for the Middle East in early October. We're excited about these. I mean, one of the things we've noticed with our members is that they've asked us to kind of take a look at what's happening in the regional markets and the different ways to bring not only the operators but the ecosystem together. And this is really focused on a very high level to bring key decision makers in the region together around certain topics. So.
I had a quick question. Yeah. Can you take a step back? And I know that I'm familiar with you guys, but I think for some of our listeners, you guys are the big company that everybody's heard of that nobody knows what you do.
Yeah.
Could you do about 30 seconds of here's the value we bring, a couple of the services you guys offer, and just how you really drive the ecosystem forward and a lot of the technologies and the underpinnings there.
Great. Okay. Yeah. No problem. GSMA is the best company you've never heard of. I mean, we are awesome. We're the global trade association that represents the mobile industry, more specifically the mobile network operators and the ecosystem around around mobile. We represent 850 mobile operators, AT&T, Vodafone, Verizon, Chinese Mobile, Docomo, et cetera, and about 200 plus players in the mobile ecosystem are associate members. So this includes, you know, LG, Huawei, Samsung, Facebook, et cetera. So what we do is we convene the industry. We bring the industry together in a number of different ways. Obviously, we have our small event in Barcelona every year. Brings about 85,000 people to the city. That one's a lot of fun and really kind of a place where mobile convenes. We do a number of other small events, roundtables, workshops. We run a number of different core programs within the GSMA. So we do a lot of work around advocating different aspects of specific technologies or solutions that we see need to be fixed in the marketplace. So, digital identity, right? So personal data, digital commerce, looking at mobile payments, looking at connected life, right? So the Internet of Things, and then network of the future. What do the network of the future looks like, and how do we adjust that? So, you know, I think there's some core things that we do as the GSMA. We also do a lot of advocacy work, public policy work, specifically in across the rest of the world, in Europe. In the U.S., the GSMA kind of partners with CTIA to do some of that. And so CTIA does a fantastic job, and we let them run with it. So that's kind of who the GSMA is, and that's what we do. So
now at the event last week, was it – so people from all over North America attended, or was this mainly Atlanta-centric?
Yeah, it was North America-specific, but we actually had people from attendees from 10 different countries. A total of kind of 276 attendees, I think, was the final number. Over 60% of those were senior level. So we are really targeting, you know, VP level and above. 40 of the attendees were CEOs, chairmen, or presidents. So for us, it's about bringing the key industry leaders to talk about the core issues that we think can solve some of the challenges in a specific region or marketplace. So
what are some of those challenges?
So, well, there's quite a few.
Well, what are the top three?
So top three, again, I would say, you know, you're looking at issues around, the connected life, so machine to machine, some issues around there. I think, you know, trying to deal with some of the challenges of you know, new and emerging technologies and solutions from online service providers and how, you know, how mobile interacts with that. Digital commerce is another one. And I think identity and authentication is a big one as well.
Now, when you were listing the companies involved, I didn't hear Apple. Was that on purpose or?
Yeah, I mean, I think Apple marches to the tune of their own drum, right? I mean, they very much kind of do their thing, and from our perspective, you know, we had a lot of the right people in the room there. You know, Apple doesn't go everywhere, and so for us, it's kind of taking a look at, you know, who we see are the key players within the region and specifically, you know, the Atlanta market. And
now, what about the Apple Pay? You know, the commerce through the phone. Is that going to be a separate initiative that you guys are working on that's separate from Apple?
Yeah, so we don't really do much with Apple or with Apple Pay. I mean, we do a lot around, NFC, right, and digital commerce. And so when we look at that solution, we see a lot of different ways to do that. And operators are looking at a lot of different ways all over the world. It's very different in developing markets than it is in developed markets, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Apple can launch something like Apple Pay, and it covers 40% of the market in the U.S., but that doesn't touch Sub-Saharan Africa. It doesn't touch Southeast Asia. You know, so there's different areas of the world where I think operators are doing different things.
How does it affect North America?
How does it affect North America? I mean, hopefully it pushes NFC and the whole contactless, ecosystem. I think we're very excited for what that's going to do.
Do you guys perceive one of those challenges of payment and online payments? I know Google Wallet has had there's been Google Wallet and a couple other payment types on Android in the last few years. What do you see as the barrier for that? Why hasn't it picked up? And has it been a single
vendor? Starbucks can do this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and so the way I view it is, you know, digital commerce is a very difficult thing. If you think of what it takes to make a mobile payment, right? If you think of what it takes to do an NFC payment, you have to have, you know, typically, you know, a consumer who wants to do it. You have to have a phone that allows it, right? The NFC. Typically, you know, if it's SIM-based, it's an NFC chip, you know, or a SIM-based NFC that you have the authentication there. You have to have an acquiring bank who allows the transaction, and an issuing bank who is your issuing bank. And there's just so many different players that are involved in this ecosystem that has to make it work. And so we're changing out all the point of sale systems, you know, in the US, and that's happening every kind of 3 to 5 years. So I think you're going to see a lot of that coming. It just, this is something that just takes a while to ramp up. And, you know, I think Apple hit it at the right time. I think that's going to be something that we're going to see a lot more of in the future. So.
Do you think that like an Amazon will get involved and do their own thing because they already have everybody's credit cards?
Yes. I think there's going to be a number of players that are going to do that, but yeah, Amazon's definitely going to be one of them. If you look at how the world is running right now, everything's going towards social media, you know, and everything's going towards, you know, everybody coming together online. Whoever has the most, I think connections, I think is going to be very well positioned. Now, having said that, if you look at mobile operators globally, you're talking about 3 to 4 billion connections all over the world. So if the operators band together, and that's where we come in. GSMA is all about roaming interoperability, making sure that everybody kind of plays nice in the sandbox. So I think it's a fantastic opportunity.
Now, do you think that the transaction will occur at the, you know, the cell phone operator level? Because people will pay their cell phone bill, right? Like they're not going to not pay that. So is that going to be the place where all the transactions are going to happen?
I don't think it'll be the only place. I do think it'll be one of the places. I think operators have great relationships with the consumers, right? I mean, you know, love and trust your operator. And they have a recurring billing relationship, a monthly billing relationship.
Exactly.
And with 3 to 4 billion consumers worldwide, nobody else can say they have that.
And everybody pays that bill.
Everybody, you have to, right? You know, or you go prepaid and you're still paying, right? So, you know, I think operators are in a great position for that. But I also think you're going to see a lot of different ways that that's going to be done. There's one APIs, out there that basically allow you to interact with the operator billing platform, right? And so I think you're going to see a lot of different solutions there. But I think there's a lot of players that are going to play in the space.
Now, what do you think the timeline is for all this to make it?
Is soon.
It sooner than later? Like, is it 3 years it'll be everywhere?
Or? Man, so I can't tell you how many times I've gotten that question. I remember being asked that exact same question.
3 years ago?
Well, it was 2 years ago by the BBC. And my comment was, this is going to be the year of NFC, right? This is going to be the year it comes out. And I was a year, maybe 2 years too early. I still think we're right on the cusp of it. I think Apple Pay is a great way to kind of jumpstart that. But they're kind of catching on to something that's already been happening all over the world.
Right. A gradually then suddenly kind of situation.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you go to Korea and, you know, last time I was in Korea, you use your device, you get on the subway, you get it. Yeah. Right. I mean, you pay at the stores, you know, you get in the taxi.
Vending machines everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So this is happening all over the world. It's just a matter of how you get to scale and make it ubiquitous.
Can you talk a little bit about just globally with China? You mentioned a couple Chinese companies, I think, when you said the participants in GSMA. Where do you guys see that market growing and changing and driving things? Is the U.S. going to constantly be driving things in the next 5 years, or is China at some point in time going to take over with the number of people that are starting to get mobile devices and get online over there?
Yeah.
Billions add up fast. You know?
Another question I get asked quite often. Funnily enough, I just got off the phone with my head of strategic engagement in China, right? And so one of the things that he's been focusing a lot on is specifically with those three operators, China Telecom, China Mobile, and China Unicom, around getting them to play well together. So one of the things you're seeing is explosive growth in China. In some ways that's slowing a little bit. But in terms of mobile penetration, in terms of what they're doing, in terms of starting to build out, next generation solutions, these guys are in a pretty great spot. The other thing I think that China has going for it is that when the government makes a decision, whether it's mobile payments or mobile identity, whatever it is, that's kind of the de facto, hey, this is what we're going to do.
They can get things done there, huh?
Yeah, it works very, very quickly. So I think you're going to see some new innovations, come out of China, because they've been watching the rest of the world for so long. And so I do think there's an element of...
They let the world have the learning curve and then they just pick
a
horse.
Yeah, you guys be the guinea pigs and then we're going to perfect it.
When you figure it out, yeah, we'll just blow it out.
Yeah, and listen, I think, again, those billions add up fast. And so in terms of connections, in terms of revenues, these guys are in no way, going to be left behind. These guys are absolutely up and coming.
So now, can we talk a little bit about the Internet of Things?
Sure.
That seems to be the new buzzword.
Yeah, everybody likes Internet of Things, connected living, connected life, digital life.
You guys play in that space too. It's not.
We do. We actually have a big program that focuses on connected living, mm-hmm. and it has a lot of different aspects of it. You know, one of the things that I think is a challenge is when you look at the kind of Internet of Things, where everything is going to be connected. You know, 50 billion things if you talk to Ericsson. You know, 500 billion things if you talk to. I mean, it's all over the
People didn't know their microwave needed to be connected.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's where it's going to be interesting. Everybody, you know, we never anticipated that there would be this much interest in this kind of a topic, because if you look at it, yeah, you can understand why your car needs to be connected or why your home needs to be connected. But all of a sudden, you're starting to see things that, wait a second, I had no idea that, you know, this could be a use case that would make sense.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, but we've got to be very careful when so many different things are connected and they're all in the same network. How do you kind of arrange the network topology and, you know, some of the specifications right. around
and
that?
Terminator. Can't forget that.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing is, you know, you've had some issues, you know, in the past with some operators globally who will deploy some type of a, you know, Internet of Things solution. You know, there was a smart metering. I'm not going to tell you where or when it was, but, you know, some smart metering solution that basically was set to ping the network every time it was, you know, turned off or something. And all of a sudden they all got turned off. And,
could
and,
be a problem.
And next thing you know, you've shut down the HLR and the whole thing right. goes down, you know. And so operators have to be very careful about how they manage this because, you know, your microwave is not going to be sending nearly as many pings as your smartphone
right.
Or your car or whatever. But at the same time, you know, they are going to have to manage that. And so I think that's very exciting. So we're looking at kind of embedded SIM solutions and how that's going to work. How you provision that.
Do we have the infrastructure to pull this off?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
In this country.
Yeah. And this is the best country to do it. I mean, you know, you look at what's happening in this country, and we just released our North America Mobile Economy Report, which is a great report that showcases what's happening in North America specifically. But, you know, just in terms of leading the global stage, I think the U.S. and Canada, North America is in a fantastic position. I mean, 85% of, you know, or I think there's 85 million 4G connections in the U.S. at the end of at the end of 2013. You know, that's more than the next four markets combined. You know, I mean, you're talking China, Japan, you know, Korea, you know, Australia, some pretty big markets in terms of that being deployed. So I think the U.S. is in a great spot. We've got, you know, a pretty fair regulatory regime that I think enables some of this. I think the infrastructure and spending, this basically kind of creates a virtuous cycle. So the operators invest in 4G. They invest in building out infrastructure. That creates new opportunities for new, you know, apps, new technologies, new innovations. And those then in turn drive revenues for the operators to keep investing in the industry. And that's exactly what we want to be looking at. You know, that's the more investment you can have in the infrastructure, you know, the more ability you're going to have to be able to monetize that going forward. And you see that by the North American operators who've actually increased ARPU, whereas in Europe, you know, you've seen a decrease. So.
Now, do you see a world where there's Wi-Fi free everywhere and anybody can just jump on?
Do I see a world where there's free Wi-Fi everywhere where people can jump on? I think free is a very interesting word. I do see Wi-Fi all over the world. There's no question. I think you're going to see Wi-Fi floating. I think operators are looking at that. They're doing that today. You know, I think you're going to see it. You know, AT&T recently announced they're going to do it in the sky, right? So I think you're going to see it all over the world. You're going to see a lot of different aspects of Wi-Fi. Whether it's going to be free and you know, ubiquitous and everybody can use it anywhere, it depends on how that revenue model and the monetization works on that. But
so no one's cracked that code yet?
Nobody that I know of.
Nice. Can you talk about that report? I took a look at it before. It's northamerica.gsmamobileeconomy.com. Can you talk a bit about what's in there? And I know you mentioned a couple of facts that are in there right now, but why would somebody want to go take a look at that and leverage that asset?
Yeah. So one of the things we do is we put out these mobile economy reports in each of the different regions globally. And in North America specifically, we're looking at all the different aspects of the market. So, you know, 4G deployment, you know, LTE coverage, looking at kind of the regulatory environment, looking at, you know, how they're deploying kind of the different projects and programs within the GSMA, things that we think are pretty important. And again, this is connected living, you know, the Internet of Things. This is mobile commerce, digital commerce. This is personal data, authentication, and identity and the network of the future. So we're looking at all these different aspects, and we're trying to kind of gauge how it relates to the rest of the world. So we have all these other, you know, data points from regions all over the world, and we kind of compare. And I'll be honest, I mean, you know, when you look at this report, it's really kind of a glowing report of how the U.S. is doing and Canada. But it's that's right. you can't forget our friends to the north. You know, but I think part of that is because, you know, again, we've talked about the relatively light and I think fair regulatory environment. I think one of the things that you look at specifically is in a lot of the parts of the world, there isn't the ability to renew licenses the same that there is in the U.S. And so, you know, the U.S., you can go out and you can build out this big infrastructure. You can spend billions of dollars building out that infrastructure, knowing that you're going to be able to monetize that for the next 10, 15, 20, you know, even in perpetuity. In some markets, those are taken away. And so how do you go and justify spending that big investment?
Too much of a risk.
Yeah, it is. And you're seeing that today, specifically in Europe. You're seeing lower investment in infrastructure. And therefore, you know, then they're just starting to compete on price. And then it's kind of a race to the bottom.
Right.
And you look at markets like that, and all of a sudden you've got, you know, low quality service. You know, people aren't using nearly as much data as they are in the U.S. And, you know, the cost is lower. But it's worth service. And you've got to question what you actually want there. And yeah. I think the U.S. operators really have done a remarkable job at in a very competitive environment, especially with over-the-top players coming in, monetizing and being able to increase average revenue per user while increasing the amount of data that people use.
Can you talk about that data? So I was reading there's more spectrum that's coming available. Like there's a big auction that AT&T is not supposed to talk about right now. Or so there were some caveats around the last week at the conference. Yeah. They read it in every single session, and I was like, I don't think this session is about bandwidth. But from what I understand, there's an auction of more bandwidth, and you know, what is that? How is that going to impact the end user experience or people actually using devices and mobile apps in the next?
Blue Fletch is thinking of getting in on that auction.
I'm not going to buy anything.
You guys
want to
bid?
I don't deep pockets like that. No, but I'm just interested in the actual end result. You know, what's it going to feel like to use a phone in 2 years from a speed perspective?
Yeah. So there are some things obviously we cannot talk about, and I'm not going to read the whole disclaimer because that I found it amusing at the beginning of every session to, you know, to start that off. But here's my take. So if you look at Spectrum, you look at this is essentially the rails of need, right? So I think when you look at when the spectrum gets auctioned off and gets put into the marketplace, I think you are going to see different ways of utilizing that spectrum to be a little bit smarter. You know, Jessica from the FCC, you know, spoke about, you know, going high and going low, trying to open up some of the higher level spectrum and some of the lower, because, you know, you have different needs and different use cases. I mean, ultimately, what are things going to look like in the next few years? You're going to see, you know, wicked fast speeds. It really is. It's going to be really fast speeds, almost to the point of justifying, you know, we're all going to be getting these speeds, and our wives are going to be asking us, why do you need something that fast? You know, it's going to be pretty amazing. And I think there are so many different use cases that we're not even prepared for, that we have no idea what you're even going to use these things for, what the speed's going to be used for. But eventually, you know, somebody was talking about, you know, remote surgery, right? So, you know, I mean, if I'm having surgery, I want to make sure that the latency is not—
buffering. You don't want to see buffering, right?
Yeah, that's right. Hold on just a second while we sort this out. You know, we're trying to, you know, get your femoral artery here. Right. You know, I mean, who knows what the use cases are, but you know, eventually, you know, this is what we're seeing. This is where the world is turning.
So it's an exciting time for you, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, mobile is a fantastic industry. You know, no surprise for anybody here, but, you know, we're very excited. And the GSMA, we have a fantastic position. We have a kind of a front row seat all over the world. So we're in a great spot. We're in a great spot.
So now, what is the biggest challenge for you guys right now? Is it, you tell me. What keeps you up at night? What do you worry about?
My three boys.
That's
keep
it?
Me up at night.
Not anything in mobile. It's just fine.
You know, I think there are a lot of challenges, but I think, you know, look on the bright side. Those challenges are opportunities, right? And so I think you know, the challenges are how do you create a better customer experience? And I know this is what keeps the operators up at night all the time. How do we create a better experience for our customers, right? I mean, we serve these people. We want to make sure they have connectivity. We want to make sure they're happy. We want to make sure that, you know, they don't get bill shock. We want to make sure that, you know, that they're able to do all the things they can do and have a convenient life. You know, there are just so many different kind of back-end solutions that have to take place, you know, standards, specifications, you know, people coming together and playing nice in the sandbox. And that's really what keeps me up at night is how do you get everybody to come together where opportunity is greater in cooperation than it is in full-on competition. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely things we need to compete on. There's no question. But I think there's so many things that we can cooperate on that are really going to make a huge difference in you know, to benefit people's lives going forward.
Now, what do you need from the Atlanta community?
What do we need from the Atlanta community? I mean, we love the Atlanta community. Atlanta's doing a fantastic job, which is one of the reasons why we picked Atlanta is kind of the start of the mobile 360. Atlanta is one of those markets where there's so many different things happening. You know, you got foundries, you've got, you know, work at Georgia Tech, you've got, you know, a lot of different, you know, startups. 250, I think, was the last I heard. You know, 100 different kind of solid mobile, you know, tech companies. It's already happening. I don't think anything, you know, specific we need. We want to get more in the community, get more involved, because we're seeing these great technologies and these new innovations, and we want to be able to take those ideas and concepts and principles and take them back to the mobile network operators at the GSMA, right? So through our board, through our strategy committees, and you know, kind of the different working groups that we have, we want to showcase some of the great things that are happening. So we'd love to showcase some of those things from Atlanta as well.
Cool. So are you guys going to open a GSMA foundry soon?
I don't think so.
Nice.
I don't think so.
But would you be up for coming back periodically to update?
Absolutely. I mean, our office is literally right across 400. So I mean, we're very, very close. And you know, we're making Atlanta our home. Atlanta is our North America headquarters. So we plan to be here for quite a long time. You know, I think we've got 50 to 75 people here that we've hired now. We're building and growing, and our presence will increase. There's no question, you know, that the GSMA has been a global trade association, but we're really pushing on the Atlanta market right now, on the U.S. market, and more specifically Atlanta.
Good stuff. So if somebody want to learn more, website for you guys?
GSMA.com.
And that's at GSMA on Twitter.
Fantastic.
Good awesome. Stuff.
Thanks. All right. So next up, is it Joseph DiCarlo or Joe DiCarlo?
Sure.
Joe DiCarlo. So
Did you learn anything, Joe?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was very enlightening.
You like that?
I did, actually. It was really good. It was I said actually as if I should.
No, it was great. A little surprised. Well,
really surprised that was good.
Well, for me, I didn't mean it that way. I thought that on a scale of 1 to 10 was a 15.
Oh man, you are a
he's
Paul Ed is Paul working Paul. It, man. Nice. I'll tell you.
He is definitely working.
All right, so Joe, you're an architect over the CNN.com or CNN mobile apps.
Yeah, not dot com. Yeah,
Turner,
mobile,
sorry,
yeah.
Not com. CNN mobile. My apologies.
Come on. Dot com, really? That's 90, so yesterday.
97, what is this? Oh, man. All right. But I think what you're most famous for in the Atlanta mobile community is your efforts focused around a lot of the organizing a lot of meetups and bringing a lot of different folks together to learn about new technologies. And maybe you can talk a little bit about what you're working on with, I know, the Android and iOS and Node.js groups and some of what that takes to pull that together. As your, it feels like that's almost as big a job as your full time position. So,
I don't know if I would say it's as big of a job, but I can say that I'm really passionate about it. To me, community is huge, and I love the last questions about the Atlanta community and what it brings, and I really feel like the mobile community in Atlanta needs to grow, and I think we're in a really good place, and we can have a lot of room for growth as well.
What made you want to be kind of the catalyst and be the connector in this world?
I am a people person. I got involved when I first started learning iOS myself. I got involved with the Atlanta iOS developer group and so involved that I eventually took it over and started running it. And mm-hmm. so when I took the position at Turner or at CNN for mobile architecture across the platforms, I felt a real need to plug into the Android community, and it wasn't as much there as I was expecting. So a lot of people wanting to be there, but there wasn't a lot of organization around it. So I reached out to what was a flailing user group and decided to reach out and see if they'd let me help, and they did, and it's been going really good so far.
Cool, excellent. Can you talk about what's the I guess start with the iOS one. What is that experience like for somebody who's like you, or you know, 10 years ago, whatever it was, 7 years, I guess. When you start to learn a new technology, going to those groups, what is the experience somebody should expect, and what is the value they get out of it?
So the experience is So what we used to do, and the way it started, and a guy named Rusty Zars actually started it, and it was very early when iOS was new. And what Rusty had started was, let's get together and let's learn this stuff together. And so he would present, or we'd get other people to present, but most of the time it was Rusty presenting because nobody really knew anything. So he just kind of prepared and presented, and everybody learned together. What started happening was everybody was learning at a pace and had gotten more advanced, and so the topics got more advanced. And then new people would come in and have no idea what anybody was talking about. So that's when I started getting involved and saying, let's do...
Somebody had to bridge that.
Let's do two topics. Mm-hmm. Let's have two presentations, one that targets more experienced and one that targets beginners. And so that's where it started. And that's how I really started getting involved. I started presenting the beginner track almost every month.
And so the Apple had a good user interface, but it was a closed system, and that's why you moved to Android?
I wouldn't have said I would move to either one. I actually support both platforms.
What's it like in an Android group compared to an iOS group?
I really thought because Android's based in Java and Java has such a rich user community that I thought Android was going to be just blow away the iOS right. community. But I was surprised that it seems, at least in Atlanta, it seems to shift the other direction. Atlanta's iOS community is really, really strong. And Atlanta's Android community is really hungry to be strong. And we're just getting there, right? And so there's a lot of people wanting to do it. But I think exposure to this user group is going to help a lot. We're just getting started where the Atlanta iOS community has had this user group for 5 years.
Right.
It's much more mature.
What's the big thing for the Android side? You guys are looking for speakers and organizations to help out with that. What are the big things you need there?
Well, definitely always looking for good speakers. Big Nerd Ranch, as you had mentioned earlier with Aaron Hilligrass, they've had some people come over and help. And we've had – and AirWatch is actually one of our sponsors, and they was able to give us a place to meet, which is a big deal. And so they give us a place to meet. They record our sessions and so we can stream them. It's been fantastic. One of the things I found, and I just started doing this, is like a change from the format that I just was explaining about the two presentations, is I had some cancellation in some speakers. And so I was stuck with having to, and this actually happened at my Node.js meetup. It was a 2.5 hour meeting, and I had two speakers lined up, both to speak for about an hour, so we'd have some buffer. Right. The first guy spoke for 15 minutes, and the second guy stood me up. I have a big meeting, I have a lot of time to kill. And so I reached back to a technology that I've used before, and it's not a technology as far as mobiles would be concerned, but it's a communication technology called Open Spaces. And so I just said, I asked BitPay, who is our sponsor and who was hosting, hey, can you get me some pens and some sticky notes? And they're looking at me like, what are you talking about?
Right? Going old school here.
Yeah, and so we did Open Spaces, and just to explain briefly what Open Spaces is, it was created by a guy who had to run a conference with no agenda and no budget, and so it's kind of the no agenda.
Easy.
Yeah, and what it is basically is you ask the audience to pick your topics.
Right, the audience becomes the presentation kind of.
Exactly, thing. And it worked really, really well. So well that everybody was a skeptic. You know, they were like, right. "What is he doing?" And they're making me sit in a circle. And everybody was kind of.
You're like panicking, right? Because you're.
No, I was actually. I've done it before, and I used to run tech lead meetings at Turner this way, and so I had a lot of experience with running them. So running it wasn't an issue for me. I was glad I thought of it at the time I did, but so I was like, trust me, just get in the circle and I made everybody do it. I just like, either you're going to participate or it's time to go. I mean, it's kind of, let's get in here. And I was like, at the last part of the meeting, what you do in the open spaces is you actually have a talking stick and you pass it around to everybody to let them have however long they want. And believe me, it doesn't take that long to say whatever they want to say about the experience, about the meeting or whatever it is. And 100% of the people said, love it. Let's do this instead of regular, we've always done.
And that's so, less stress because you don't have to worry about the speakers.
Agreed, right? So I took that to my other two meetups. So now instead of having two presentations where people are spending, we have one presentation, and it can be whichever type of topic, hopefully the latest and greatest, what people are really interested in. And then the second half of the meeting, everybody gets to talk about what they want to talk about. And it's been going very well, and a lot of good reaction from that response.
Cool. Now, what do you need from the community? Do you need more sponsors? You need more attendees? What do you look for?
It's really about sponsorship.
Meeting space?
I'm not big on sponsorship. The only reason why I got sponsors is because I need a place and I didn't want to charge for meetings.
Right.
And that was the only reason why I needed sponsors. It's not about the meeting making money or anything like that. It's about the community for me.
Right.
And so the more I can do for the community, the better. And so it's about having speakers is great, and just anytime you can bring people to the meetings, that's a win. Like, if I got one speaker, if I don't have a speaker, I'll speak, whatever, we'll deal with that. It's the more people there, the better the community is. And the open spaces actually really works much better when you have the larger crowds too. So
now the attendees, are they people that are working people in the field, or are they students?
It's a complete range. We have people who come in, I'm in college, I just want to do this, or I've been doing whatever for years and I want to get into development, or we have recruiters. As a matter of fact, at the Node open spaces was really interesting. One of the topics was by a recruiter that was there. He said, recruiters, the good, bad, and the ugly. And that was the topic. And it was one of the ones that was voted for, and it was fantastic. I mean, everybody was able to say what they wanted to say, and he was able to respond to it, and it was very well received by everybody. And but we have recruiters show up. We have business people who are looking to hire. We have people who have been doing this for years and want to excel or just contribute. And one of the things that one of the comments made by somebody at the iOS meetup was, one thing he liked about the open spaces was, I don't have time to put together a presentation, but I know a lot of stuff, and it was giving me an opportunity to teach other people the things I know.
That's cool. It's definitely awesome. So what are you other than organizing meetups and running CNN Mobile, anything else cool you got going on right now?
That's a lot. I don't have a whole lot of other stuff going on. The whole iOS 8 and iPhone 6 stuff has been big for CNN, so that was really a lot of work.
What's your thoughts so far on iOS 8 and the new iPhones?
I love iOS 8. I think it's fantastic. I think the iPhones are good. I really like the form factor of the iPhone 5, so it's going to take me a little bit getting used to the bigger form factors. But, you know, I already carry around my Nexus 5, so I'm kind of used to that form factor.
Nice. And are there any upcoming meetups? So the next, I think the Android ones are the third Thursday of the month. Can you talk about the dates for the iOS and the Android ones you guys have upcoming?
Yeah, so we have the second Tuesday of every month is the iOS meetup. And we meet at Atlanta Tech Village at 7 p.m. The second Thursday of every month is a Node.js meetup, and we meet up at BitPay, which I know that's not exactly mobile, but I'll throw it out there anyway. And then the third Thursday of the month is the Android meetup, and we meet up at AirWatch, which is in Sandy Springs.
Cool. And if somebody wanted to find those, where would they go?
You can go to meetup.com and look up Android developer meetup, Atlanta Android Developer Meetup, or Atlanta iOS Developer Meetup.
Awesome.
Cool. Now, do you have any side projects you're working on?
I always have something
secret
going on. I wouldn't say secret. I'm always working on something. You know, I mentor people, and so more than working on something myself, I try to help others. There's a gentleman that I met at the iOS meetup it was really interesting. After the meetup, we usually have a gathering afterwards. We'll go to a restaurant and have a social. One of the things I don't do at my meetups is actually serve food, and the reason for that is so we can concentrate on the meetup, and afterwards we have a social, so we can concentrate on that. And so it's really beneficial. But I met this gentleman named James after a meetup, and we're talking, and he was really sharp. You know, he was talking about all these things, and he was really engaged in the conversation. As I was walking to my car, he happened to be parked near me, and he was telling me how he'd never coded anything professionally. He just started learning like a month ago, and he was
a month ago.
Yeah, the guy was like really, really sharp and knew his stuff, and he was wanting to change his career. So I started mentoring him and working towards him, and he's doing some part-time work right now, and hopefully he'll be doing some full-time and actually get to change his career. But I just really enjoy working with others and trying to develop
other
people.
And you do it, that was just kind of an informal, random thing that occurred?
Absolutely, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah,
awesome.
Great.
Cool.
So if somebody wanted to learn more, you send them to just the CNN mobile site. Everybody's got that.
CNN mobile site rocks, like, right? Man. No, if you want to learn more about the meetups, go to meetup.com.
And then
look
you can find them.
Yep.
Cool. And then Open Spaces, do they have a website, or is that just Google Open Spaces?
If you Google Open Spaces, you can see on Wikipedia. Open Spaces, I've done it in a lot of different venues, and it's a fantastic thing. I actually, what was interesting about your conference is I actually organized a conference for the International Association of Software Architects several years ago. I guess it's probably been about 8 or 10 years ago. Anyways, but I was an organizer of the conference, which that's a lot of work. So
yeah, you know how fun that is.
It is a lot of fun. Anyway, and yeah, so there's a lot of work to that. But and one of the part of that conference is we did a huge open spaces at the end, and it was very successful. So it was cool.
You gonna remember that, Reed, for next time?
Got it. Yeah, I know who's running it next time.
Exactly.
Nice. All right. Last guest we have is Ed Pimentel.
Pimentel.
I was pronounced
close. Ed, how'd we do?
Perfect. Yes.
I think you're lying.
Which
to us.
Try?
Mobile Monday Atlanta. Tell us about it.
Well, Mobile Monday, as you know, is part.
Jump
of
in there. Don't be afraid of the mic, there, okay. Ed.
So Mobile Monday is part of a global community, 140 cities and 50 countries. Mobile Monday is privileged and honored to be associated with GSMA, and perhaps for almost 10 years, the only feature nonprofit Mobile World Congress in Barcelona. Of course, you know, many other things have happened, so there are others there just as good or better. 2 years ago, a friend of mine in Silicon Valley and I, we said, how is it that we can help U.S. or actually the global community with startups? So we put together a program. And anytime you put a program, there's usually a lot of noise. And something that I learned from John Chambers of Cisco, you always need to do something that is 10x above the noise. And that's what people listen to. So what we put together was a 12 weeks, no charge acceleration for disruptive startups. And they would go to...
Where was this?
It was announced at the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, mm-hmm. but up to last year, it was only in Silicon Valley. As we begin to work with the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, and at the request also of the city of Alpharetta, they say, you know, this is great, but we like to keep our startups here. So we
in
also,
Alpharetta.
Oh well, no, in Greater Atlanta. Oh,
okay,
Greater Atlanta, not just Alpharetta. I was so then what we also launched in June was a no charge startup virtual incubation acceleration right here, and we begin. No, we have at least six very good innovative startups that are each in the $1 trillion market. So that, and then there are others that are, one is in China, recommended by another Mobile Monday friend, you know, or chapter. One is in London, and one is in Seattle. The one in Seattle I'll talk about less later. So this allows us to bring startups here.
Right.
Right. So this is something that the Metro wants to do.
Sure. Right,
bring startups here. And as you know, there is Silicon Valley is basically a very successful place. And now there is Silicon Dragon. Silicon Dragon is mirrors Silicon Valley, and we're directly connected with them. And if you've seen, basically connected to Jack Ma, right? And Jack Ma was now the richest man in China. And once again, they said, you know, Ed, we're now positioned to invest in U.S. Who are good? Well, for us, we're privileged to have that position that we're able to recommend, you know, startups so that they can be, you know, accelerated.
So how many Mobile Monday chapters are there?
140. But the top, there are 15. I'll show you later. There are 15 chapters that are part of the greatest city, like Greater Atlanta, Greater Toronto, Greater mm-hmm. Tokyo, Greater Berlin, Greater Paris,
we're
London.
So we're part of the top 15.
We're the top 15, but believe it or not, Atlanta and Silicon Valley are really leading it.
Really?
Yes. So here in Atlanta, it was Atlanta, us, that put together the crowdsourcing for the success of startups. When you look at many virtual incubation or other companies, sure, they will incubate you, but they don't crowdsource your success. We liken ourselves to Kickstarter and Y Combinators, and we mirror X startups, and we mirror 500 startups, and we mirror Startup Nation. Those are really, really the successful accelerators incubated worldwide. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that, you know, that are able to go ahead. Okay, I see, because now we are in a very disruptive era. Just as you mentioned before, there's going to be some amazing things happening. But the same way that the carriers, operators, cable MSO can take advantage, so two kids, a dog in a garage can do that. So is WhatsApp. So is Next. And the thing that we do is we basically work with we have 50 Fortune 500 companies that would try to do like the switch pitch. Instead of the startups pitching to them, the
enterprise pitches to the startup?
Exactly. It's because it is better for you if you were a startup to get a deal than to get a term sheet. And then if you do not, and are thinking after, if you do not get a term sheet, if you don't get a deal and you do not get a term sheet, then we do the Y Combinator, meet the Kickstarter, then you crowdsource your success, crowdfund. And so our GA crowdfund.us will launch on the fourth quarter of this year. So that's our approach. So if you need, you may need someone from a high-level marketing guy. You may need some legal representation. You may need some high business acumen, corporate developer. And most startups, they just say, oh, go do it on your own. Right, and also on the team, in terms of staffing, as you know, we're living now at a time where we're going through six generations, right? Six generations basically have the silent generation, the baby boomers, the X, the Y, and the Z, and each of them have their own values, their own behavior, and it's fine. But you need to be able. How is it that you're gonna staff an organization that you understand? How is it that the X, Y, and Z, for example? I'm a baby boomer, right? I mean, kind of unlikely baby boomer. So baby boomers, their family is their life. But for the connected Z generation, their friends is their life.
Right.
And for the millennials, that's when it comes to work habits, they want to have fun first and then work. But understanding how is it that they behave, they act. So this way, if you have a startup, you can tell them, you know, you can come. When you report, anytime you want to. But you basically, you want to make sure that the project is completed, right? So instead of saying, come on 8 and leave a 9, well, you're not going to have, you know, that the millennium there for long, right? Because you don't understand really how is it that he behaves. And nothing wrong with the way he behaves.
So now the startup should get involved with you because you're this mega connector, right? You have access to a lot of contacts and resources.
Actually, I'll show you. We have, for our own acceleration program, we have 18 top investors, and some of them are Google Ventures, NEA. So these are the people that invested in Instagram and so on. Right. So we have investors, we have mentors, and the those are the people that are, we like them to be repeat or three-peat, people that are really experienced. But what we're doing too, there are times where the individuals are very good, but however, they have not been vetted. So then using something like, we'll launch that next month, our version of Google Answers, you know, or Yahoo Answers.
Is this Call Ed? Is that the Call Ed app?
CallEd.com.
You actually ask a question, and then those C-levels and those individuals know that believe in themselves, will answer it. And after a while, they get accredited, and you can say, oh, okay, now you can then you go ahead and work for me. Now, the thing that we do is that all these individuals, we don't ask anything from them. It'd be nice if they give us some sponsoring, but so they go there and mentor, and they can, whatever money they earn is all theirs, mm-hmm. right? Anyone that works with us, you know, we want to really grow Atlanta. So people are a puzzle. You don't ask for any money.
Well, it's an interesting business model.
Well, you have to be disrupted to grow, right? So
what do you need more of?
We actually need help in growing the community, right? we love to have, you know, individuals from this organization, because we have a lab, and I'm very passionate about this. And it goes back. You ask our dear friend here whether there's a foundry. So what we have an IoT cloud innovation lab, mm-hmm. which already
so connect, it's an actual building.
An actual space. Building. I cannot say it where because it'll
top
be
top secret.
No, it'll be announced in 2 weeks, and it'll be in, right. it'll be in the newspaper. So I can't say it now.
All right, I got you.
Right. So this actual lab, you know, I'm going to use some maybe some buzzwords, you know, and you can know later on I can explain it for you. So this later. Innovation in this innovation lab is an IoT cloud, right?
Internet of Things.
Right. So you can basically build your MVP, right? And then
minimum
launch
minimum viable product.
Right. And then you can launch it.
I think you made LeBron James.
Yeah. You can launch it via Auto Trader, Home Depot, AT&T, Verizon, Telefonica, you know, G3.
And I got all them pitching me to get a hold of my MVP.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I know Ed. I'm a friend of Ed.
Well, I'm
that's how it works?
No, that's not how it works. No, that's not how it works. Basically, we have a large community. You know, there's 140 cities. But recently we did something even, I'm going to say we're very proud of that. We connected another foundation that they're in 100 countries. It's the Coffin Foundation. Mm-hmm. They're part of the Startup Nation. So now, not only we have 140 cities in 50 countries, now we have 100 countries that are funded. Countries fund those startups.
Wow.
Right? So so we've been very successful at that. And we've been successful worldwide, but now we want to be successful here in Atlanta.
So you talk a little bit about community. Can you talk about what are you looking for within the community? You're looking for people with ideas who want to come and actually invest time in trying to grow them into companies? Is that the first
that's
step?
The,
and then you
the
also
first
need
thing.
The
so,
second phase of that?
So there's been another announcement. As again, you know, I met with David Duncan, but I cannot say what we agree on. So he'll be the one saying, we agree on this, right? There are a number of individuals that we like to allow them to make the announcement, do what they want to do, and then we support them.
David right. Duncan from EO, Entrepreneur Organization?
Yeah, but I'm not saying what
you're not
agree.
Saying that?
You That's ask him.
Top secret.
You ask him. If he says it, then fine.
You don't want to be disruptive and
well,
announce
come on.
Early.
Well,
you have to tell us by
no.
definition that
no,
what disruptive
do.
Is.
No,
you got to be disruptive to grow, right?
No. Well,
he may be buying Spectrum at auctions. So yeah. No,
by the way,
I've got a disclaimer.
Yeah, by the way, can you ask me some of the three questions you asked him regarding technology? Because I have something to share with you. It talks about.
Do you think I remember the?
well, you ask you about you ask now? About you ask about payment. And
yes.
you ask about NFC, and some of those same questions, I'd like to share some with you. You know, and you ask, I think you asked about.
Share away, buddy.
Tell us about payment. Tell us about
well,
it. Ed, what's big in payment
so,
for you?
So this is, we're approaching someone that has the means to be able to offer very innovative products. At GSMA 360 / Mobility Live, one of the, you know, one individuals there, a company that were deserved to be promoted, was the company that said that they built in 2012 the ability to do the connected transportation. Well, someone here in Atlanta would show Peter Tokar from Alpharetta, and someone from AT&T that just left AT&T, he was shown there in 2005. So basically, the ability to purchase a product. You know, a ticket for a bus or train with a QR code was done in 2005. A CTIA, that became a standard in 2010, right? So it goes to show you what we do. And the same thing goes now on the payment. So people, it's true that that Apple Pay is doing something that others have not done. But there are other ways to do the same thing that others want to replicate. So what are they doing? They're using the host card emulation that basically allows you to be the issuing. When they do the issuing, they basically disrupt TSM. And you know what TSM is? The trusted service manager that program that has been agreed as far as the standards where the telco can be the payment platform, but so is the Apple, the Amazon, the Alibaba, the WeChats of the world, right? And the banks can be basically disenfranchised, which is, was that not what Apple did? with the banks, and then the banks license that from them. Now, in terms of NFC, back then, which was also talked about and presented at the world at the Wireless Technology Forum. What about doing NFC for non-NFC phones? So that was done back then, right here in Atlanta, right? So these are the things now regarding NFC. NFC is pretty good, but in the future, you don't need it. If you understand how is it that sensors and beacons and ants work, basically all you want to make sure is that you have a card present, right? So NFC is being used for location, but to be able to substitute the SC, the secure element on the SIM, they're using the trusted element with the fingerprint. So there are many, many ways to do what Apple has done, but do it better than Apple, you know? And it could be done right here in Atlanta.
Right here in town.
It's throwing the gauntlet down. I like it. What about the just in general IoT? What's your thoughts on that? Anything cool you have going on with that?
So at our IoT Cloud Lab has things that are, why would IBM want to be there? Why would Verizon want to be there? Why would others want to be there? So what's happening in our lab, we put in together the IoT OSS BSS. The current operation support system, business support system does not match IoT. Also, as everything becomes connected, security needs to be really looked at, right? So now you need to have something, an actual standard, you know, with an ecosystem to really support the IoT security. And as you know, what everyone talks about, there's no security in the cloud or anywhere as long as you have PKI and a certificate of authority, because that's what everyone's now is compromising. And you may say, oh, I'm Apple, go ahead and take this upgrade. And that's basically a malware on your Apple, right? On your device, on your laptop, right? So that needs to be replaced. And only one company agreed and validated what we said months ago, right? And Ericsson just happened to buy a company just like that. But we too have something similar on our lab.
So. Exciting time. Now, if somebody wanted to get involved, is there a website for you guys?
MobileMondayATL.com.
And then when they get there, what can they find?
Invitation to come to
invitation
a meeting.
So what we do
the 333. So we do three startups with three presentation for 3 minutes.
So speed dating for startups?
Yeah. And then in the future, but we have other things. So in the future, basically, we do we're doing the switch pitch. So as AT&T and Home Depot, Auto Trader is already there, Verizon are there, then they tell us what they want, and then the startups there can create something based upon the standards, you know, and the requirements that, you know, the companies that we love here, you know, AT&T, Verizon are here.
And then this will all happen in a couple of weeks when you open up the doors?
In a couple of weeks, is open.
And you'll tell the AJC, but not me, right? That's what I'm hearing.
We'll tell you.
Nice.
Brett, maybe we'll have
I think
back.
I heard a commitment there.
I think I heard that too, yeah.
And then we'll tell them.
Reed,
too.
You'll tell. I know you're going to tell Reed. That I know. All right, that's MobileMondayATL.com for more information. Well, thank you, Ed, for being part of the show.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of our guests, and special thanks to Brett Cooper and Blue Fletch, who are the underwriters of this show, and this show would not be possible without their help. This is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Mobility Radio.